The Late News Hour
with Phil Williams on 5 Live.
6 minutes past 11, the man who's the National Police Chiefs Council lead on child protection says not everybody who views online images of child abuse should be charged. Instead, they should get counselling and rehabilitation. Chief Constable Simon Bailey says such people are low-level offenders and shouldn't be taken to court unless they pose a physical threat to children.
We are managing a risk. This does not mean that the offender doesn't get arrested, because I would recommend they absolutely do. But there is, I believe, a space here for the effective use of rehabilitation. And this is around saying we need to target our resources against those people who are intent in committing the most awful forms of abuse. And please don't get me wrong, I absolutely understand that every time an image is viewed, that child is being re-victimised. It is abhorrent.
Chief Constable Simon Bailey. The Home Office says, and this is a quote for you, viewing child abuse images is a terrible crime and should be treated as such. The National Police Chiefs Council says the number of child sexual abuse claims has risen massively from just over 21,000 in 2013 to just over 39,000 by the end of 2015. Chief Constable Bailey says his top priority is to stop the thousands of men he says are online with the express intention of grooming, then raping children. But is it possible to rehabilitate a paedophile? Juliet Grayson is a psychotherapist and chair and co-founder of Stop So, which is an organisation that rehabilitates sex offenders and stops others from committing sex crimes in the first place. Juliet, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
First of all, on Chief Constable Bailey's suggestion that people who view indecent images are low-level offenders, do you agree with him?
Well, relatively, yes. I mean, every time someone looks at an image of child abuse, then a child has been abused to create that. So a low-level offender is still doing something that's involved a child that is utterly horrendous, and for that child may well have lifelong consequences. So, you know, child abuse is utterly horrendous, and there's no getting away from that or excusing that, but someone who's looking at child abuse images and isn't literally creating new images. They do call it creating a new image when they charge them. Every time someone downloads an image, they have created a new image, but they're not taking a new child and making new photographs. So if someone's looking at an image that's already in existence, I'm not saying that that's an okay thing. I'm not saying it's acceptable, but it is a lower level than going and finding a child and actually committing a contact offence with a child.
So when you work with someone, when you work with someone like that, how do you stop them from downloading those images?
Well, you have to look at what's the cause behind it. And most of the vast majority of sex offenders I've worked with all have trauma in their own history, whether that's that they've been sexually abused themselves as a child, or there's been violence in their history, or some other big traumatic event. And by working with them on their own trauma, you can quite often, not in every case, but quite often, significantly reduce their desire to act out, because it's like you heal the underlying predisposing factors that are leading to them committing the offence. So therapy can be incredibly successful at really helping people to step back, just as therapy for cigarette smoking and therapy for alcohol can be incredibly successful at helping people to stop.
Can I read you a quote from a convicted paedophile called Aaron Collis, who's spoken to The Guardian last year? He's still in jail for his offences. And the quote is, "I did not wake up one morning and decide my sexual preference. I am sexually attracted to little girls and have absolutely no interest in sex with adults. I've only ever done stuff with adults in order to fit in with what's normal." Now, if that's the case, and that might be the case for a number of sex offenders, is rehabilitation even possible if they're saying that they're predestined to behave in this way?
I'm coming across sex offenders who have different causation for their offending behaviour. So there's a group of them who have trauma in their history, and you work on the trauma in their history and it makes a big difference. There's another group, And James Cantor has done a lot of research around this. And he says that paedophilia is a sexual orientation in the way that heterosexual or homosexual orientation. And he actually says he scanned the brains of paedophiles. And he says it's hardwired faulty connections in the brain that create a permanent attraction that can't be mediated. And he reckons that it often happens in the first 4 to 5 months of pregnancy. So it's literally happening before they're born, and they're born that way. They're also more likely to be left-handed. 8 to 10% of the general population are left-handed. 30% of paedophiles are left-handed. And they're also likely to be 2.3 centimetres shorter than the general population. So there are a number of factors.
So if that's right, and we assume that science is right, how do you go about stopping someone whose brain has been hardwired to become effectively a child abuser?
Their brain has been hardwired to have an attraction to children, and they're not responsible for their sexual attraction, but they are responsible for their sexual behaviour. And I think what's really important is that we help them to develop strategies to never become a child molester or an internet offender. And it's not easy. I mean, you know, I thank God that I'm not someone who has that kind of sexual attraction, because it must be really, really tough.
So this guy, Collis, the one who's been convicted that I've quoted, he says... Yeah. He says his belief is that the only way to stop him fancying little girls is to explore anti-libidinal drugs. In other words, to reduce or take away from the human being the sex drive. What's your view on that?
We have people who ask us for that, and we can help them to arrange that if that's what they want. What happens at Stop So is everybody coming to us is asking us for help to stop. They know what they're doing is wrong, or what they're thinking of doing is wrong, and they're asking for help to remain law-abiding and not to break the law. If you have someone like that who is very motivated never to harm a child because they know the impact that that will have will be lifelong, then they may well decide to take drugs on a daily basis that will reduce and cut down their sex drive.
Do you think
for
that's
someone
effective?
Else who, yeah, it can be effective, so I'm told, yes. But for someone who's not motivated and who doesn't have that moral sense of not wanting to harm someone, then of course they're not going to take those drugs.
But so what you could arrange for a court to impose it.
Well, you can impose it all you like, but if someone's got to take a pill every day, unless someone's standing there watching them take it, how can we impose it? How can we ensure that's going to happen? So for the people who are motivated, and there are a large number of people who are motivated, then I would trust them to take the drug and to protect themselves that way, because it makes their life easier and better, and they can live a pro-social life in that way. But for someone who says, well, actually, this is my sexual orientation and I don't care, then we're it's a different ball game.
But how are you going to get those people to respond anyway to anything?
I don't know. That's at Stop So. What we do is we work with the ones who want to stop and are asking for help to stop. So there are a group of people who probably will have to be imprisoned, and that may be the only solution. But there are many, many people for whom that's not the case. And we are working at Stop So. We work with many non-offending paedophiles, which means that they have the attraction, but they've never committed an offence. They've never looked at a child abuse image. They've never touched a child. And they're asking us for help to remain law-abiding. There's an interesting thing that I found recently. We have an online form that's just collecting information from sex offenders, and one of the questions is, at what age did you first know that you had a problem with your sexual behavior or your sexual thoughts? And I was gobsmacked, because 11% of people said they knew by the time they were 10 years old. I was gobsmacked by that. And a further 40% knew by the time they were 16. So that's 51% of the sex offenders knew by the time they were, 16, knew that they had a problem. And a further 21% knew by the time they were 25. So 72% of the sex offenders on this questionnaire knew by the time they were 25 that they had a sexual problem. What that means is that we have to get to schools and to colleges and to make it socially acceptable for people to say, I know I have a strange sexual orientation. I know I have thoughts that don't seem to be the same as everyone else. Can you give me help so that I never act out on these and become a child molester? Because just imagine if it was your son or your daughter, but more commonly your son, how would you feel if he turned to you at the age of 16 or 17 and said, I've got a problem with my sexual thoughts and I know what I'm thinking isn't normal and I'm attracted to children. Wouldn't you rather that he got therapeutic help to enable him to stay legal rather than getting locked up or castrated or, you know, anything else?
If there's sufficient evidence to show that therapeutic help works, is there?
We're doing an evaluation at the moment. The therapeutic work with sex offenders has largely been done with groups, and the evidence shows a 42% decrease in reoffending rates in groups. Now, we at StopSo think that the evaluation is going to come out even more successful than that because the therapy is tailor-made to the particular client's needs. So we think that it's going to be significantly more effective than that. But as I say, we're in the process of doing an evaluation at the moment, and it's going to take time for people to go through their therapeutic process. And then you have to leave it a year or two to see if they remain law-abiding after the end of the therapy.
It's highly risky, isn't it? Because in that year or two that you're leaving it for them to be assessed, they might be offending.
Well, it's possible, but at the moment, when someone is arrested for looking at child abuse images, it often takes 18 months to 2 years before they are taken to court and convicted. And they're just left in that time without any support, without any therapy. They're just kind of abandoned. So it seems to me that actually if they've had therapy and they're getting therapeutic help, that's got to be better than just arresting them and then leaving them to it.
Jim Gamble joins the discussion, former head of the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre. Won't have heard all of what Juliet had to say because he's been on the television. But I hope I'm, Juliet, not doing you a disservice when I said that you broadly said that you agreed with Chief Constable Bailey's suggestion of a low-level offender. You understood where he was coming from on that. Jim Gamble, do you understand what he means by that?
No, I don't. I think it's not possible to differentiate between a high and low-level offender on the basis of what Simon said. He's saying if they're looking at low-level images, they may in fact represent a very small risk. That's not been my experience. So there may be a variety of means to risk assess, but, you know, judging them on the basis of the image they've looked at is not one of them.
So what's your experience then, that if they look at an image, they will act on it?
Well, my experience is that you cannot guarantee that they won't. So why would you play, you know, the lottery with the safety of children and young people? And the question for individuals who understand what sex offenders do to young people is, would you be confident enough in the system to allow one who says they're rehabilitated to babysit for your child or grandchild? And I've never met anyone who, in all honesty, would allow that to happen. So the answer to that is, why would you want them to babysit for anyone else's? The problem with Simon's, you know, positioning on this, where I find my real issue, is that he's delivering the wrong message to the wrong people. It should be a message to government saying there's too many offenders, too few police, with too limited resources, so you need to invest more. But we're allowing the government off the hook while we divert into an argument about counselling for people with predatory instincts towards children. That debate can be had, but it shouldn't be the main one. The main one should be that we've got the Chief Constable almost abdicating by saying we can't manage this. And what we need to do, we need to be reassuring mums and dads and carers that actually the police have the techniques. Police officers across the country are doing a fantastic job. They need to be better supported. We need to reinforce them rather than simply say, well, we can't deal with the numbers.
Juliet Grayson's with us, Jim. I don't know if you know Juliet through your work, but psychotherapist and chair and co-founder of StopSo, which is an organisation that attempts to rehabilitate sex offenders. And she was just saying that they've done some work, some research work with some of the people they work with, and said, when was the first time you realised that you were sexually attractive attracted to children? And some say at the age of 10, some say at the age of 25. And her point to me a minute ago was, if we can reach them at that age before they've offended, but when they first become aware, isn't that the best way to tackle this as a problem?
Well, that is a good way to divert young people who have not already become involved in contact offending. So dealing with young people who are on that kind of curve in their development is very different than dealing with your actual predator who's online viewing images. Mm. Because the individual who goes online and views these images doesn't look at them and give them marks for artistic impression. They're sexually satisfying themselves while they look at these images.
And sure, but I suppose what I'm asking you is, are we as a country good enough at getting to the stage before that, stopping them becoming those predators?
We're getting better at helping to divert some people who recognise they have a problem. But the vast majority of individuals who are matured, who are paedophilic in nature, who focus on children, they are online. We know that 100,000 can be downloading images at any time, yet we hypothesise that that number's too great. Yet we're able to prosecute and convict 55,000 people in 2013 for drunken driving. It's about priorities. So if we want to force more people to reflect on how they feel and what they think and the threat they represent, we need to create a credible deterrent. And 10 arrests per month per police force across the country is not a deterrent. So let's have a proper conversation about getting the government to invest in the police service, to invest in understanding why people do what they do, you know, and interdicting that behaviour earlier. But let's not simply abdicate and say, well, there's just too many, so let's push it to counselling.
Sure. Just on the sentencing, though, Julia, I will come back to you, I promise you. On the sentencing, Jim, is any sentence going to be enough of a deterrent to someone who... One study that Juliet was just telling us about shows that perhaps might be predetermined in the brain from 5 months in the womb to be sexually attracted to children. What I'm trying to get across is, if it is that ingrained in you that that is your sexual persuasion, is any sentence going to stop a human from pursuing that?
Well, a sentence is going to inhibit you from accessing children and young people if it's a custodial sentence. A sentence of that nature is going to provide the opportunity for you to be engaged with therapeutic services and other support while you're inside. And when you're released, you need to be in a properly funded sex offender management program. So I think this isn't an either or. Those who represent a threat to our children need to be identified, located and removed from the environment where they represent a threat. That's key.
Juliet, go ahead.
Well, I agree that we need to get proper funding for all of this. And I agree that, you know, there are going to be certainly people who need a custodial sentence, but they all come out at the end of the day. And we need to find solutions. I think with 72% of sex offenders saying they knew by the time they were 25 that they had a problem, we really need to be focusing on preventative work early on in their journey. And that's really where StopSo is succeeding, because 38% of the people who come to StopSo for help have never come to the attention of police or social services. So we're often stopping the first crime as well as preventing later crimes. And really, prevention is so much better than cure. Rather than picking up the pieces after the event has happened, we really have to try and change society's thinking and make it acceptable for people to come forward and say, I have a problem, I want help. Because the more we lock people up, make it a deterrent, talk about how awful paedophiles are, which I completely agree with all of that, but the more we push them underground and make them hide their behaviour, the worse it is. If we can try and change the culture and let people know that there is help out there, and if they know they have strange thinking, troubling thoughts, are beginning to think about accessing the internet, they can come forward, contact an organisation such as StopSo, Google sex offender help, we come up on the top of that, and get the help that they need in order to remain law-abiding and not to break the law, and not to mean that all these people become victims and have those devastating lifelong consequences of being a victim of sexual abuse.
Many people who are engaging you have already broken the law because they've already viewed images. They have actually broken the law. And I would suggest to anyone listening who hasn't done that, who has these thoughts, contacts you, engages any of the support services that are out there. But let's not kid ourselves. These people are amongst the finest liars in the world. They lie first and foremost to themselves. And the fact of the matter is, you know, if you look at the death of April Jones and Tia, if you look at that time, the government attacked Google. That's like attacking the postman because junk mail is delivered. But in the immediate aftermath of that, the Times newspaper ran an article where a group of convicted offenders said, if only I'd known about the stigma that would be attached, if only I'd known about the harm I'd do to my family. Because these people latch on to conversations like this and they do what they always do, three things. They minimise, they self-justify and they blame others. Those patterns of behaviour are reflected in the thousands upon thousands who are out there tonight engaging these images and engaging our children. So let's keep this real. You don't know that the people you're talking to are not reoffending. You just know that they haven't been caught. I'm not taking away from that. But let's be real about this. These people are very good at operating below the surface. They're very good at manipulating those who are close to them so they can control and influence them to believe that actually they're not committing offences. And I have seen people engaged in getting support from therapists who actually have at the very same time been manipulating and engaging with children in sexual behaviour. So it's not just as straightforward as when they talk to you and tell you that everything's okay and their behaviour is good, that that's the reality of the case.
Thank
Polygraph
you both very
and
much.
Lie detector tests.
Thank you both very much for discussing with us on 5 Live tonight. To Jim Gamble, former head of the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre, and Juliet Grayson, psychotherapist, chair and co-founder of Stop So, an organisation which claims to rehabilitate sex offenders.